Well, for the remain, for those of you that have remained behind, the left behind crowd, thank you. I presume that some of your colleagues are probably doing other things that may involve something more enjoyable than being here. I don't know that for a fact, but appreciate y'all staying around. We had a good delegate session. We got through a lot of things in the time allotted, had some pretty good discussion on a few of the, I guess, more major items or things that maybe we have a little trouble coming to grips with, and one of those was the Farm Bill. But throughout all that discussion, I think we kept a very forward-looking kind of policy in place. When the question came up about supporting direct payments, that was soundly rejected. When the discussion about, in essence, having multiple programs for multiple crops, that was rejected. We want uniformity in that policy structure versus some kind of patchwork approach. So I think we're well positioned to continue to move forward in the discussion going into 2012 here as we work on the Farm Bill. Farm labor issue is one that really has sort of riled up the countryside, and, you know, we had didn't really have a lot of disagreement on the position, but it was raised, and, you know, we want to be sure we maintain that family farm exemption that has been there in the past, and, you know, frankly, we would like to even probably go back and extend it, if we could, to the various business structures that exist in agriculture today, and hopefully through that process, through the regulatory process, we can be sure that farm families, no matter how they're organized, should be able to have their children working on the farm. Once again, I want to emphasize that we do not want youth performing hazardous jobs that that may be hazardous with respect to their age. Safety is always very important. All of us that grew up on a farm know that there are hazardous things on the farm, and I was taught very carefully by my father and my uncle and, yeah, frankly, my mother, too, about what to do and what not to do on the farm and you know, maintain safety. We had some discussion about the fiscal situation of this country and policy. We passed a policy to approve a balanced budget amendment that had been out of our – we'd had it in our policy book in the past, and it had been removed, and it is now back in. In addition, we passed a resolution, I think, expressing our desire for both parties to work together to resolve the fiscal mess that this country is in. And we indicated we wanted to do that primarily, basically that no departments were off the hook. We need comprehensive review and reform. We also said that we want deficit reduction to occur primarily through spending reductions as opposed to tax cuts, but we just said primarily. We didn't say there should not be, tax increases. We did not say that those spending reductions the overall deficit reduction wouldn't have some component in the future, but primarily the cuts should come from spending restraint. So that's a little of my summary as I was sitting up there chairing the meeting throughout the course of the day, and let's open the floor for some questions.
Bob, you discovered a lot of ground, and certainly a full day today of discussion. But so, what's the headline coming out? What's the biggest thing that you take away in terms of a soundbite from this delegate session?
Well, I was, and this is kind of looking at it from my personal standpoint, and everything we've been through with the initial 2012 Farm Bill discussion. I think the fact that we once again had another debate internally about the direction we needed to go for the future, and in essence, we basically said we need to, within the fiscal restraints that we have now and with the realities, policy realities that exist, that we need to be forward-looking as opposed to looking back in the past. And I think the delegates maintain that position. So, you know, for us organizationally, since we have a great challenge given all the commodities we represent, all the regions of the country, it's very difficult to create, you know, a uniform consensus. The same thing occurs with the U.S. Congress. They have to deal with the same kind of influences. But I think we were pretty unanimous in how we wanted – it wasn't unanimous, but, I mean, we've got pretty clear direction from the delegates about which way we want to proceed as we go into the 2012 discussion on the Farm Bill. So I kind of highlight that one just from, you know, my internal looking at everything.
Well, to continue with what Sarah was saying, you did, however, the delegates did, however, say that they want to maintain the current marketing loan program and the possibility of raising the loan rates.
They said to reflect more clearly reflect market value.
Okay. Would you interpret that as that you could lower them?
If the market goes the other way, perhaps. I mean, I think the cotton guys were even asking for lower, basically a lower rate. Am I correct in that, sort of? I don't know. Huh?
We're asking for a whole lot more.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's true, Jerry. Our delegates did put that in there, and I think that frustration, or that expresses the frustration that we look at now as we've seen huge increases in input costs. But, you know, to more closely reflect does not necessarily mean getting into a market-distorting level. We're really talking about maintaining a three-legged safety net, the marketing loan program, a catastrophic revenue loss-type program. I'm having a senior moment here. Catastrophic revenue loss program and then the crop insurance. Right, thank you. Let me get through with Jerry here just a second.
Okay. I have a question that is different from that. I wasn't there when you discussed SNAP, but I noticed that it says here in the policy book that you support elimination of carbonated beverages from food available in or under assistance programs and those beverages with bottle deposits. So you support people on SNAP not being able to buy Coke and things like that with their SNAP benefit?
Well, I think that indicates a desire for them to purchase more products that are more closely related to the original product. You know, like you're talking about orange juice and fruit juices and those kind of things, milk, as opposed to soft drinks, maybe, I presume. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about that one, Jerry, to be honest. But
because it's such a big point of discussion in the questions about pizza, is what role do sugar beverages
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't think our delegates were approaching that issue on the basis of obesity. I think they were approaching it on the basis of agricultural products. We've always wanted those federal programs to support the products that our growers produce, and, you know, that's a lot of other products besides just what happens in a soft drink. So, all right, Chuck.
Well, you have clear direction from the delegates. It's the largest U.S. farm group. How is that going to figure in the overall farm policy debate by even reckoning you guys are way different than everyone else? What you've been so far on the from the bill, except your friends at the Environmental Working Group.
I would suggest that a lot of the other ones are way off doing different things, too. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of unanimity out there from anybody as to what the next farm bill would look like. I mean, that was obvious as they went through the super committee process with different commodities wanting different programs. You know, one of the things our delegates have been pretty clear on is that, you know, we do want a kind of an overall policy framework and not have this patchwork of different programs for different commodities. And so that allows us to actually do something that, or propose something that should be more desirable to Congress. It's going to be more desirable from a implementation cost standpoint, for sure, as USDA has to go through these reductions in budget that you know, and all parts of government will. But, you know, in terms of implementation of a program, having complicated multiple phase programs for different crops is not going to be easy to implement. And so, what we want to come up with is a more unified and simpler policy structure that incorporates those three legs that I talked about. Anybody that wants good policy? We are going to try to recruit allies, Chuck, to be honest. There's not a lot of commitment out there to anything at this point. So I view the playing field as wide open. And if we can make the case, which we need to, that we have a good policy idea that's both fiscally responsible, that makes sense in terms of implementation, that provides that sort of systemic safety net, if you will, for producers in this country as we go forward, I think we will find proponents of our position.
Bob, what will be the process from here with your policy of determining how much risk that a farmer shoulders from one crop season to the next? How much on crop insurance, how much on catastrophic loss, but how much each one of your producers are going to bear each year?
Well, we still have work to do, to be honest. We still have analytical work to do. We need to get a CBO score. But ultimately, the degree to which we set up the parameters that assist producers, that's going to be driven by budget, to be perfectly honest. Our program, at least the concepts we've talked about so far, they're scalable. They're easily scalable, as opposed, that may not be the case with, all programs. But we can set that percentage coverage level, frankly, at whatever level that the budget support will have the budget support. Well, absolutely. I mean, it's both on the Hill and with the general public to say that, we're talking about producers getting and paying for, first, catastrophic risk coverage. It will be subsidized by the government. The government will take it, but there still will be a fee associated with that. Crop insurance obviously has premiums associated with it with some subsidy support from the government. And so producers do have skin in the game, and I think that makes it a better sell, if you will, with the general public as opposed to just getting a check written.
The cattlemen are going to talk about the death taxes. We should spend less time on that here. Should that be a higher priority issue as we work into the conclusion of 12-4-13 and that expiration?
Well, we are certainly aware of the expiration, and we will actually in the morning discuss our priority issues for the coming year. I pretty much expect that the estate tax is going to be included in that in some form because we all know that we're in kind of in a short window and that something will have to be done. Otherwise, we revert back to old law. And, we don't think the current exemption is good enough, but it's better than old law. And so we need to move forward and do everything we can to get that addressed by the end of this year.
If Congress can agree on a new farm program, do you think you can convince Congress to do a simple extension of the current farm bill?
I've been asked that what-if question, probably a dozen times in the past 3 days, Jerry. It's hard to predict. An election year is going to be inherently difficult unless both parties decide it is in their best interest to move forward and get a farm bill passed. And I find that, maybe a little unlikely. I could be wrong. We have passed farm bills in election years before. But then you do what's the alternative? Well, the alternative is an extension, or at least one alternative is an extension, a one-year extension, and push the discussion into 2013. But then you've got a whole host of issues related to maintaining a budget fund or a level of budget funding that allows the current programs to continue. I think there will be great, sort of political resistance to doing that. And so I don't know how it's going to come out on balance. If you ask me in about 3 or 4 months, I can probably give you a better idea. But I think, there's a lot of uncertainty in the air about what's going to happen with that 2012 Farm Bill discussion. Yes, ma'am.
How much, as far as the systemic risk reduction program that was proposed, my understanding that name was struck, right?
Yeah, our guys just don't like the name. They said we want to maintain all the principles. They just don't like the name. And I guess it is kind of a policy wonkish sounding name, but maybe we'll come up with something better. Plan B may be better. I don't know. The board will make the determination about how we move forward, though. The key point is that even though they didn't like that specific name, they maintained all the principles underneath it that, frankly, allowed us to craft the program.
Do you have a name you want us to call?
I hate to admit this. I was the one that proposed the other name, and no one likes that, so I don't know. And I don't have much experience in branding products, obviously, and I was an abject failure, to be honest. Yeah. We'll figure out. Somebody will call it something at the end of the day. And we, like I said, we still have work to do, and we need to get a CBO score, which we're working through the process of getting that. So it's going to take us a little while. But, you know, on the other hand, we're talking about sort of a major new policy direction, and but we think it's something that is more sustainable for the future in terms of public policy and the budget dollars that go with it. Sure.
Biofuels industry has not had a lot of wind on the hill lately. You came back to your government today in a pretty strong section, laying out support, what needs to happen going forward. You talk about the potential significance of what you all did in this area.
Well, we had a serious discussion about maintaining the renewable fuel standard. There was an attempt to, you know, basically eliminate that, and we know the debate that is out there between feed versus fuel and food versus fuel. But at the end of the day, our delegates came down and said we need to maintain that part of a renewable fuels program. And so, you know, once again, that we had a healthy discussion. I think it was that was a victory for renewable fuels. There were a lot of good points made. You know, one of the points that was made by some of the proponents of that was saying, look, you know, we've kind of agreed to give up the blend credit and, you know, the import tariff, and, you know, that's one thing, but, you know, let's keep the RFS in place. And our delegates said yes at the end of the day. Jeff?
There was discussion of the livestock standards in the primarily in the poultry area that other producers were concerned about setting national standards for size of cage and production of poultry. Can you just talk about the discussion among the delegates of why they favored that and why perhaps they didn't.
Yeah, and basically, although the policy proposal did not reference it, it was basically wrapped around the UEP-HSUS agreement to move to the Congress to seek federal legislation to federalize basically animal care for egg hens. And we've sent a coalition letter. Our policy has been opposed to federalizing animal care standards. And what the discussion was about were those members in some states, those egg producers in some states coming back here trying to get us to change our policy that frankly would put us, if not in support of the UEP-HSUS proposal or an agreement that they're going to move forward in Congress, at least put us in a position of not opposing it. That failed. There was good, healthy discussion about why we do not want to engage in an effort to, in essence, help HSUS with their sort of incremental agenda of, you know, trying to restrict animal production in this country. And I've had a lot of discussions with my friends at UEP, and I know them well, and explained why we are not going down the path of supporting that agreement.
Sir?
Bob, you've watched a lot of different administrations try to reform and streamline USDA. Was Secretary Vilsack's blueprint that he unveiled in the meeting bold enough to really position the agency for the next?
Well, he and I sat down and had actually a pretty long talk about it. I mean, when you see what's happening with government and with budget, it's almost like it's a given that they're going to have to do it. That has always been a difficult task to do in the past because of sensitivities, congressional sensitivities in terms of closing offices. But, you know, we're in a new environment now, and I'm going to find it interesting if anybody actually opposes sort of the structure they've laid out and the way they're talking about cutting. To me, you know, some of the stuff probably should have been done a long time ago, and that's what Secretary Vilsack agreed with that. So is it enough? I don't know what enough is going to be. Budget realities will determine that, but I certainly think it's a good start at streamlining USDA, getting rid of a lot of efficiencies. There's a lot of physical plants that are costing money, basically, in terms of offices that, you know, frankly, aren't providing a lot of service because, you know, they either have zero or one employee. And those kind of things. And then you tie that in with the effort USDA is moving forward on in terms of their software programming, basically, the MIDAS program. And so a combination of that and reducing cost, you know, by attrition and reducing and closing in these offices, I think makes sense. And our policy actually supports that, has for quite a while. We just want to be sure it's done in a very conscientious manner and where service levels aren't degraded, and that's the Secretary's goal, too.
President Bowman, the gentleman in Hawaii who came forward to talk about biotechnology, I don't think a lot of people appreciate where he comes from and how big the support that was. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and it's probably not widely known that the Hawaiian Islands, because of their isolation and then multiple island locations, are, you know, the biotech companies are here growing product because it's a you know, place they can do it without, you know, affecting other crops, and so they can develop the breeding lines and the seed stock and all of the kind of things they need to do here. One of the things they've been faced with in Hawaii, and Dean Okamoto is the president of Hawaii Farm Bureau, and it's been a long-held thing, is the Hawaiian state government is trying to, there's a sentiment that biotechnology needs to be restricted and, you know, some elements in Hawaiian society don't like it. And so this was an effort to show how important that piece of biotechnology is here with the research and the production work that goes on here in these islands. And I think it sent a very good statement. It was a very good statement in support of the technology and then, you know, frankly, in support of the role that Hawaii plays in providing that technology to America's farmers and ranchers. And you heard Craig Hill, new president from Iowa Farm Bureau, talk about all the letters he had in his hand, you know, that he was going to give to Dean, talking about Iowa farmers supporting what they do here because of that, you know, connection. All right, guys, about one more question. My throat's about ready to go.
Broadband versus GPS?
We basically maintain the position that we have held in that. You know, we want broadband expansion. We've been working on that. I personally have been working on that with Connected Nation. But at the same time, we don't want the technology to destroy the capabilities we have for precision agriculture through GPS signals. You know, a lot of these are very technical issues, which I'm not competent to comment on, other than the fact that we think we should be able to have broadband and maintain our GPS technology at the same time, and the companies just need to figure it out, and Congress and the regulators, I think, are going to keep them honest, if you will, and make them do that. So that's our goal. We want both technologies, but we don't want to lose, in this case, GPS, because it's so very important to agriculture these days. All right, thank y'all. Appreciate y'all being here. Mahalo, I think. I've got to practice my Hawaiian words. And I hope you have safe travels home. Enjoy the rest of your stay, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you again in Washington, D.C. or elsewhere. Thank you.